Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, I'm up at Snacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Homilies, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Happy New Year to all you fine gentlemen. So what do you think about
Good morning, Happy New Year.
What do you think about the market being flat on its ass this morning? Dow down 323, NASDAQ down 133, and S&P down 36.75. World all headed the same way. But is this all because, I don't know, did somebody lose yesterday? They were supposed to win in football or whatever? What's going on?
Ohio State tried to. They tried to give it away.
Yeah, they had, what's his name's last game, and, even though it doesn't mean as much, Kevin, it's still kind of on my bucket list to go to a Rose Bowl game. Kind of the granddaddy of all bowls. It's still.
I went, and it was spectacular, and I would recommend everyone going at least once if your team plays in it. It's awesome.
How far away do you have to park?
Not that far. And they have tons of parking, sort of like on a golf course right around the stadium in Pasadena. They have great tailgating, you know, from both fan bases, especially the Midwest fan base really hits it hard, as you can imagine. And it's 70 degrees, and it's beautiful mountains, and then you watch the sunset. I mean, it's just fantastic. And it's a great stadium, and it's easy, like, bathroom and concession situation. It's just a spectacular event.
What place was built? God, I'm going to say, well, the Irish played there. Their last bowl game before 1971, they played, was it Army in the Rose Bowl in was it 1925, Kevin? 28?
No, I thought they played Stanford.
Might have been Stanford. It was in the 20s, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
That place was built with 100,000. It was built that big originally? I think it had a track around it at one point. All those old places, I think they did. Because they were all huge track and field stadiums, weren't they? Because they actually almost got bigger crowds than the football, right? And Soldier Field was built for, I'm going to say, the Pan American Games? And you might want to look that one up.
So the Rose Bowl was built in 1922, so it's almost 100 years old, 97 years old. The original configuration was 90,888 capacity.
And how many people lived in Pasadena in 1922? Nobody? That'd be way out in the sticks.
Yeah, it still kind of feels like it's way out there, but obviously a lot of people live there now, but it still kind of feels like it's way out there from downtown.
Yeah, I'm going to say it was built... You know, there probably was a big track around it.
The capacity now is 106,869, so that over the course of 100 years, they've added 16,000 seats.
Well, they put the big, huge press box and all that stuff up there, too. That was never there. I mean, way back. To that extent, the thing's massive. Just saying. So, Kevin, what do you make of starting a year, I'll say, clunk like this? I was... doing some research yesterday on last year, and of course, it's kind of an odd thing. Everybody's trying to pick a day in which last year changed, and there's a pretty good article here by Jeff Cox, CNBC, and we've referenced him before. He claims it all went wrong on an off-the-cuff remark on PBS interview after the market closed on, what the hell date was this, October 8th? By Fed Chair Jerome Powell, said interest rates were a long way from what he considered to be neutral. And the Dow dropped 157 points the next day, and then it fell some more and some more and some more, and they claim it's all back to this one sort of comment. And I had a bad back once, Kevin, and Actually, I was going to the club. I went to reach over to open my locker, and my back went out. So I go see the chiropractor, and he says, "What'd you do?" I said, "Well, I reached over to open up the locker, and I went out." He goes, "It means it was ready to go out, and it just happened to be the next thing you did." Now, does that mean that the market was just too high, and just waiting for somebody to say something, or was it really the Fed's utterance that turned everybody's mind in the whole world about which way the market's going?
I don't know. Roll the dice.
Yeah, roll the dice. It's it's been a theme since 2008 for me. You know, we've been doing this what, 8 years, Vinny, or something, even before that.
February 1st will be 9 years. This iteration.
The Fed was walking down a path. They didn't know what they were doing. They were out on a limb. They saw the people around the world doing it. I don't know if they led or followed, and they got out there, and I kept saying, what's the comeback for this? What's the fallback? Unless you get, when you drop $2 trillion into a market, if you can't get 4-5% nominal growth, even if a lot of it's inflationary, if you can't get that kind of growth by throwing that kind of money at the economy, then when you start to back it off, you got a real problem. And then sure enough, when they start to back it off, they got a problem. I don't know if it's a real problem. I mean, a real serious problem, but it's a problem. And I don't understand, Kevin, how 90% of the economic world didn't believe that. It is so obvious, and it was so obvious. I can say it now, but why is it everybody just sticks their head in the sand and rolls with it, or what? Is that just the human nature?
Yeah, I think so.
I never thought it felt so good at the time, and I think I said, if we don't get 4.5-5% nominal growth out of this, it's not worth it. And you know, the weird part of it is I used to when I said I had Milton Friedman for class, and I say it all the time too much probably, but that isn't where I learned a lot about what he was thinking about. He used to put out a lot of what do they call it? I won't say a short story, but like the Journal of Political Economy and so forth. Kevin, when you put out something that's like, I'm going to say 8-9 pages long. What do you call those? Booklets or papers or what are those things?
Essay?
I'm not sure. That's what I'm asking you. I don't know what's the, there's probably 15 of them in a political economy book that's 100 pages long or something, where guys do different economic studies on different areas, or, you know, I'm sure they do it in medicine too. I mean, you know, every new study is not worth a book, right? I mean, and he would actually describe places where people tried to really overload, and here's like the world's biggest monetarist. If you tried to overload what the Fed was capable of doing, I mean, they can drain some out and they can put some in and they can play with the interest rates and they can tinker with credit and it'll change the economy. But unless you're so far one way or the other, it's not really going to change it all that much. But there have been times where people absolutely equate that when money's flowing into the system, that all this growth happens. And that if money's pulling out of the system, all this negative growth is going to happen. And the fact is, Kevin, if you look at history, that's absolutely not true. You can get nominal growth, or you can make growth more difficult or easier. But one of the biggest growth engines or the biggest growth times in this country was directly after the Civil War. Yet the money supply was contracting because they had gone off the gold standard for the war and issued dollars that weren't worth anything, hence the name greenbacks. But they were being used, and the Confederate money came out, so the greenbacks were being drained out of the system so we could go back on the gold standard. This is like 1868 through 1875, say. And yet the growth post-war was probably as high as it's ever been in this country. I mean, it was dramatic. You had a lot of inventions during the war. You had a lot of things that were happening. People going back home needing seed. They hadn't farmed in 3 years. There was massive growth. There were times in one of them I remember was in India. There was a period of time where they somehow were going back on a gold standard. They were subtracting from the money supply. You had deflationary growth because growth was happening. People were inventing stuff. People were doing things for the first time, and there was a lot of growth. People were moving to the cities. So the idea that you just pour money into a moribund economy that doesn't really have any, your efficiency isn't getting any better. But we're talking about 2008, 2009. We just come off a very big wealth kicking the ass, basically, for a lot of people in the economy. You don't just pour money into the system and think 3 years later everybody's going to be okay. I mean, to think that that was going to happen, that somehow it was going to filter down through the person who just lost 50 grand in his house, it was never going to. It was all very inconceived. Ill-conceived. But the good news is, it did refloat the banks, it did refloat asset prices, so the 1 to 5% that's their game, all of a sudden became fatter and happier than they ever were before, but they weren't there without everybody else. But I don't see how this could not have been anticipated, or am I just on my soapbox here, or both?
Well, you know, Tom, I don't know exactly how to answer that, other than to say there's a lot of stuff. Let's put it this way. We talk about unanticipated consequences all the time, but there are things that are predictable and that are predicted. And, you know, often enough, we just don't like to hear it.
Well, again, if we were, I can only imagine a meeting, and if you and I and Maddie were all in there, we're all a bunch of other people, they're going to say, okay, stock market's way down, housing prices are way down, we got to do something. Somebody somewhere is going to say, we got to get those prices back up again. And you know what? They're not all wrong, right? So, which is essentially what they did. Look, because, I mean, it, you know, there's our man Fari, you know sometimes Fari's out there. But I'll tell you what, he brings a perspective to not only our show, but I think to a lot of what people... If you listen all the time, once in a while you grab a serious pearl from him. And his being coming from a state that where, you know, a few people were involved and was a revolutionary problem. First the Shah was involved and these other guys took over. He brings a point of view that says that the people in control are in control. And it may not, we may have less of that here because of our political system, but it's not like there's none of that. The 10 people in this country and 100 people who really count don't want their stock and their house and all their houses stuff being blown out there behind, and they will tell people to get my prices back up there. And I don't know if he's 100% right, but he's not 100% wrong. I mean, that was going to be the strategy, Kevin. We're going to care more about the stock market and housing prices than we are the guy losing his house. I just believe that here, and I think it's a problem, and it shouldn't be that way in America, but it still is. Not to the same extent it is other places, but it's not like it's not there. Or am I going off the reservation here?
No, I think you're right. I don't know what to add to it.
Yeah,
Tom.
Well, there's no. I just wish people would listen and open their eyes a little bit more and see and realize and not be as concerned about the next minute, the next moment's tweet, or Nancy Pelosi this, or Trump this, and say, okay, we've got problems here. How are we going to get to them? And I don't see us getting closer. I see some good stuff, Kevin, since we're ranting about the new year. I seem to see a lot of really good young people, both on the Democrat and Republican side, getting in the Congress this year. Now, are they going to burn out being there two terms, and not being able to do anything because there's so many people there, and it seems like that power's concentrated so much in the top these days? Or are we going to? I think a lot of what has to happen in the country needs to happen in Congress first, where some of the new people getting in there actually get their point of view across. I'm not so sure they are now, both in the Senate or in the.
But Congress isn't about doing the country's business anymore.
Well, that's my point. I mean, people on Face the Nation last week, but of course, some people I was with wouldn't even listen, but one of the guys was saying, and I wanted your opinion on this, he said, when the founding fathers put things together, and this guy's a constitutional dude, and he goes, whatever the hell that means, he said they were always worried about the power of the presidency. They didn't want a king, they didn't want a dictator. But also, in the back of their mind, the first president was going to be George Washington. We didn't have to worry about anything like that. And they sort of also figured that all other presidents were going to be like Washington. And he goes, they're not. they haven't been, and they're not going to be. And every time, the time that presidents can take power is in wartime, because you got to make decisions quicker, blah, 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 blah. He said, but now, if you went back to the founding fathers, he goes, I'm going to say what probably shouldn't, and that, you know, it's in their mind, the idea that you could, you can trump up a definition of war. Where, okay, we're going to have a war on terror for...
Is that a pun?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not him. He didn't do it. I mean, the Bush and Obama did. You know, we're going to have a war on terror that's going to last, you know, a century. Or we're going to have a war on drugs that's going to last two centuries. Therefore, I get to get all this power. You know, because those guys would never have been fooled by that. You know, because, I mean, I think right now, one of the biggest problems we have, the reason why the people don't have a whole lot of power, Kevin, is because the Congress doesn't have a whole lot of power. Specifically, the House of Representatives. I think it needs to start there. You know, get the committees back doing what they're, the same McCain speech, basically, that he gave before he died. Let's get the system back together. People go into committees, they do good work, the stuff comes out, it gets debated, it gets fixed, it gets tweaked, and all of a sudden you got a law. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that system, Kevin, I really don't. But I don't see it working that way. I mean, we've seen a couple bills come through that did, so it's not totally dead. But I could see somebody really bright, say for instance, you, Maddie Weber, you know, you guys get elected to Congress, I could see after 2 years you guys leave it. You've seen it here in Illinois. A lot. There's a lot of very young, bright people who have been elected after two terms. They say, screw this, especially being a minority party. I don't think you'd do anything. Am I wrong on this whole mess?
No, I don't think you're wrong about it. I think it's disillusioning for some. I think it's corrupting for others, where people go in idealistically, and it doesn't take them long to be co-opted. I think one of the biggest problems is that... that now both parties expect a certain amount of fundraising that goes right into the party coffers, and your ability to get appointed to committees and in key roles in Congress are affected by that. It's just all operating off of the wrong premises, and I don't know how you fix that. It would be nice to think we could do it, but it's, you know, even if we can just chip away at a little bit every president's term, but we don't have presidents that necessarily want to do that.
Well, no, I mean, I don't
see... Remember, most presidents are products of the system, too. And if they aren't, the people around them are.
Well, then the news media zeroes in on essentially two or three people. And I'm going to say that there are probably... Well, the people I met when I was out there, this is years ago, I found most of them to be pretty engaging... Not to meet too many from Illinois, but they were pretty much engaging, seeming like they gave a bleep people. And the idea that you can't stand Pelosi or McConnell or Schumer doesn't mean that you should spit at the last guy or lady who was elected as a representative. Well, maybe he's there because they think they're going to try and do something and maybe change it the other way. I mean, you know what I'm saying is we're like throwing out everybody now. Where people, I've heard people in the last week say, I can't stand any politician. Well, I'm here to tell you there's some people there that you probably would like. And I think are actually trying to do the right
job.
Well,
I might even like some of the people I particularly can't stand, at least in the in the setting of, you know, at least in the social setting.
And you may have made the news has affected them. You know, it's one of those things, every time I've seen things written about something I knew really a lot about, starting with the guy across the street blowing away his parents years ago, every time I read one of those articles and everything I read about, certainly in the finance or the option area, most people who write them don't know what they're talking about. So yet people will not like people or like people based on an article or two, and it's who knows if what the person knows is even getting in the article or what they're trying to accomplish. Well, you're always talking about that. I mean, if your only connection with somebody is some reporters, now how good of a job are they doing? I'm saying it's uneven. Some people probably do a good job. Some people probably don't. You know, I'm just trying to find a way where 2019 is better than 18. Kevin, how am I doing?
You're depressing me.
Here's my thought on that. Be honest with you. If you don't say, boy, Maddie, looks to me like you got a compound fracture of that right leg, and it's really a mess. We better get our best guys together to put it together. If we don't understand the problem, we're never going to get the fix. If we say, God, your leg's hurting, here's an aspirin or two. I don't know what that could be down there. I don't know what that thing sticking out of the skin is. If you don't identify the problem, you can't get there, Kevin. So I don't think identifying it, even though it's depressing, I think it can also be okay, now at least we know what we're dealing with. I mean, if we kid ourselves.
Yeah, well, you're right about that, Tom. The problem is that you can identify that problem all we want. It's and everybody salutes it when you identify it. And then everybody goes back to business as usual.
Well,
and that's the part that just drives me nuts. Is we all know we have a problem, but then we're going to go reelect the same people who are the problem.
Are they the problem? Or are they just unwilling to really attack them?
I don't know. They may be the result of disinterest. You know, we really don't have a public that's well educated on issues. I know people who are, you know, they live and can think about politics and things like that every day, and they still are dead wrong about facts.
Yep.
Just the basic facts of certain situations.
Well, right. And I think that instead of, like, for instance, this problem with the Fed right now, and I really do think it's a problem. It's obviously a problem today, and it's, well, something's a problem today in the market. Even though the Dow has come back 100 points. We've got these issues.
But right, everything's over. Everything's better now.
We're okay. Buy the dip. You know, the president, instead of taking pot shots at this guy, I mean, put me in the Oval Office. Okay, I realize the Fed has a very, don't put me in the Oval Office, but I'm saying if I was there, again, this is something that I'm, you know, just spent my whole life studying. I realize these guys have a serious problem. How's this guy going to work off a balance sheet that this is the part that I can't get anybody to understand, Kevin. You, I can, and Maddie, but they're not in control of this one. The only time that the balance sheet changes and everything else they do, the open market committee balance sheet is the Fed goes out and they buy $10 million worth of U.S. 10-year notes, okay, and they buy them. And now they're on the balance sheet and the money's in the system. So now they have $10 million on their balance sheet, money they essentially created. Okay, that's fine, Kevin. They're in complete charge of that. They know when every one of those things is going to run off, when they're going to get the check from the government. They may have bought the 10 years, but there's only 9 years left. There might be 8 years left. They know exactly where they are all the time, which still makes it a tough job to manage the money supply. But then they go out and they decide we're going to buy these mortgages. Okay, now what? These mortgages, there's a life to them. They're alive. None of the other stuff's alive. And on day one, the problem is right there. If you would have asked me or any other, Hal Snar, anybody, I put myself in a situation or a PhD, and I'm not, they're going to say, you got a problem with these because they're 30-year instruments, but, oh, by the way, they run off in 7 years on average, and it could be anywhere from 5 to 30. Could be 2 to 30. You got a problem. Especially if all of a sudden rates go down a little bit and everybody refinances next week, you could have half of these things coming back to you in 4 years. Well, you don't want that, Kevin, because you can't control it. That's why it was a really, really bad idea. And yet everybody went and did it. Even the people in Europe that went to negative interest rates, at least you control there's a stupid buy, right? Nobody's going to come buy it from you or redeem it at a negative interest rate. But these mortgages, they're coming at you. You don't know what you've got. The Fed has never put themselves in that kind of position. And I think that the conversation between the Congress and the President and the Fed is not that you're not independent, that you did something that's way off the reservation and now we're all sort of paying for it. What did you do that for? And don't do it again, like ever. And in the meantime, we're just going to have to say, you're going to, instead of buying more mortgages, let the mortgages run off and buy more bonds. At least get yourself back into the game that where you control your inventory. I mean, is that conversation too tough to have between tweets?
Between tweets? No, I'm sorry, not time.
Yeah, I know I'm being a little too technical here on a Wednesday morning, New Year, but where am I wrong here? There's a solution here that's not the best, but it's pretty obvious what it is. Last thing you want to do is go out and buy more mortgages. Keep yourself in the same trick bag, which is seemingly what they're doing. Right or wrong? I mean, just saying.
David writes in on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter at StocksLetterAndJocks. He says, the government's fraud against the American public will never be over until we return to a formal budgetary process abandoned in the GFC and dispense with continuing resolutions, CR.
I think he's 5%.
There's a lot of merit to that.
Yeah, but it's... You know, remember, Remember the zero base budgeting, Kevin? No, no, let's talk about some sports. Remember that whole concept?
Yeah, whose era was that? Was that a Carter era?
Yeah, a Carter era. And
approach.
Yeah, and I went to two firms. Believe it or not, at Allied Van Lines was about the time when all this was happening. And I went to Pullman, and I had just come out of grad school, and they said, "Hey, this time guy, he knows about this crap." I was the zero base budgeting guy at both Allied Van Lines and at Pullman for probably 3 months in both places. Tried to at least educate people on what it was. You got to tell us what it all is. It sounds great. Well, the problem, Kevin, is it was a system that was designed. There was nothing wrong with the theory. Basically said everybody in the entire place ranked everything you did, from Matt Weber opening the door in the morning to Thomas putting a lock on the gate at night, and everybody in every spot ranked every thing everybody did, every task, and how much it cost. And they would say, okay, your budget's X, and you'd pull the ones out that weren't as valuable, and you'd work your way up. They always fell apart at about the third level of management, because management had no idea what the people under them were doing, to the point where you could start ranking, this guy in Kevin's group versus this guy in Maddie's group, and whether opening the gate was more important than turning on the electricity. I mean, it totally fell apart when it got up to about the third level of management, because they had no idea what was going on below. So, like what David writes in about the budget, yes, but if the whole mechanism was there, the budget wouldn't be the problem, right? It's the problem that they don't have the mechanism to create the budget. Or where am I wrong?
Well, I don't think you are. It was zero base also, I mean, was the theory of it to say, here's where you need to start, because with any level of budget below this, you might as well not exist?
No, it all had to do with ranking tasks essentially countrywide, company-wide, to where somebody somewhere, the four analysts would bring what they did up to the assistant controller, although a finance example. The assistant controller would say, no, you can't do this, you can't do this. Then they would take him to the controller, and then he'd figure out what all his people did, and he'd rank his stuff. And everything you did, there'd be 10 things Kevin did in the morning. And all 10 would be ranked and how much they cost. So depending on the budget of the guy above him, he'd cut the bottom two, three things out that you did and say, it's your ranking now. You're saying that the least thing that you do is pick up the trash three times a day. You can pick it up twice a day. Okay, let's do it twice a day. So everything, everywhere in the country, company, anything everybody did would be in this budget at the end of the day with how much it costs. And somebody on the top would essentially know one from the other and be able to go to every department and see what everybody did. And the fact is, places aren't that organized. And you get to about vice president level, they go, I don't know anything about this crap. What are you doing with this huge pile of stuff on my desk? And the thing would all fall apart.
Well, when we get back, I know we got to go to breaks, but so when we get back from the break, let's talk about, what the reality is of how that works.
S&P futures down 29.50. Dow's coming back, only down 272. Was down 350. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, don't pay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Ben Weber, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P futures down 30. Dow futures down 267. Nasdaq futures down 120. We actually were down a little bit more than that, so I guess this is somewhat of a buy the dip at some point. Chinese manufacturing seems to be, that's the number people are pointing to this morning. Well, that's really been out for a day or two. Of course, we weren't open yesterday, but evidently the December numbers, the second read, seem to show that they actually contracted versus just being a slow growth. It's the first time in like 8 or 10 years they've had a contraction, but I guess it's not to be surprised. I mean, these tariffs and everything were causing people all kinds of trouble on both ends. Allegedly, there wasn't one soybean bought by the Chinese the whole month of November here, which has never happened before, or at least hasn't happened in a real long time. So a lot of stuff that people are doing worldwide are having repercussions. I'm not saying who's at fault, but whatever it is, it's not good. DAX down 6, FTSE down 33, CAC around down 64. A lot of this stuff has been catch-up because somebody's placed some closed, not closed. Asia, Nikkei down 62.3%, Shanghai down 28. It's 1.1%. Hang Seng down 7.15. That's almost 3%. Oil, we've got down 34 cents, 45.07. Brent down 39. Its spread is $8.34. Natural gas, look at this, under $3. Wow. Maddie, there must be a long-term view of this winter. It's got to be a mild one.
because that was up to 450. That's incredible. 272 to 450 down to 298.
This weekend it's supposed to be in the 40s.
Yeah.
For the Bears playoff game.
Our Bob, 128. Gas, 175. And then I heard somebody got it at 169. Audrey, and I'm like, well, there was so much for the 175. That is wild. Flaming oil, 167. Gold, however, on a rally, up $7, 6 months high, 1288. Silver, 1551. Which actually, the horrible month the market had in December, I'm going to say my people are the best month we've had all year. So keep going, gold. I don't know what I might try and get out of it at some point here, but at least we had a nice December. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a very good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways as many people return to work today, but apparently not everyone because we still have light traffic volumes today. As a lot of folks probably have the whole week off. That's the only explanation I can think of. But we're very light and quiet on the Edens and Kennedy. Same with the Eisenhower Southside expressways are quiet too. Weather today, overcast skies, a high of 33 as we hover around freezing, but not expecting any sort of precipitation today, so that's good news. Right now it's cloudy and 30, going up to a high of 33. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 54. Right now it's clear and 31. In sports, Blackhawks played in the Winter Classic yesterday at Notre Dame Stadium. I don't know if any of our guys made it out to that one, but it was a close game in the third period before Boston took it to the Hawks and ended up winning 4-2 was the final in that one. Coyotes were off. The NBA teams were off as well. Bulls are back in action today against Orlando. College football, it was a busy day in bowl games yesterday and some area games of note that people might care about. Iowa beat Mississippi State 27-22 in the Outback Bowl. Penn State lost to Kentucky in the Citrus Bowl 27-24. Ohio State beat Washington in the Rose Bowl 28-23 in spite of getting outscored 20-0 in the fourth quarter and making that game a lot closer than it was for the majority of the game. And then the nightcap was an interesting one. Everyone clamoring for Georgia to beat in the playoff, and they lost to Texas in the Sugar Bowl, 28-21. Lastly, college hoops, Notre Dame lost to Virginia Tech, 81-66. Chief.
Yeah, Kevin, you were finishing up.
Yeah, those Georgia guys, a lot of the players were tweeting out, you know, about how they got screwed and how, you know, they should have been in the playoff, only to go ahead and lose. Kind of makes you look foolish, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And Texas is not that great. I mean, they're solid, but they really dominated that game.
Yeah, they were guys on the, well, the people doing it were saying they were much more physical, the knocking people off the line and so forth. It was, what do you make of, I know you were finishing a thought, Kevin, but before I forget, a couple of the announcers in one of the games were the increasing trend of people not wanting to play in some of the bowl games, and of course his conclusion was to pay him. Yeah, I mean, that's probably not a bad idea conceptually. I don't know how you do that, but anyway, I guess there are, how many, was there 10 guys this year or 20, and he's thinking it'll double again next year? Seems like it's doubling every year. Is that the right pace?
I am fully supportive of the players who decide to opt out.
Yeah, I am too.
You know, look, everybody's making a business decision here. With a playoff, there is really no point to these bowl games. It's an extra game. It's a moneymaker. It's a business decision for the schools. It's a business decision to stage these games for whatever the bowl committee involved is, the not-for-profit that seems to pay its executives pretty darn well. It's a business decision for the coaches who get bonuses for going to bowl games. Why shouldn't the players get to make a business decision, too?
Well, you know why? Because most people are sitting on the sofa with a beer, and their attitude is these guys are getting a scholarship. I never got a scholarship. I'd love to be playing. I'm sitting here, and you know, most people would say they'd play for the Bears for free. So all the guys there are overpaid. I mean, it's unfortunately a
yeah. Well, good for them.
Yeah, well, that's right. I've been with you on that.
You know, I have no problem with any player who is going to act in his best interests rather than play an exhibition game. And, you know, I have no problem with anyone who wants to go play one, too. You know, if you want to go play the game, go ahead and play the game.
Well, what
I 100% agree with Kevin, and because he's right, and no one really should fault the players. The question, I think, is, from college football's perspective, if you don't want this to continue to double every year, which it looks like it might, meaning that next year it might be 40 guys that sit out and et cetera, how do you solve it? And I've heard people say, you know, well, give these guys insurance policies. And that's part of it. But we've seen that the insurance policies don't pay out the same as the actual contract. The kid from Notre Dame that I'm drawing a blank on his name, the linebacker that went to the Cowboys, for example, that got hurt. He fell enough in the draft that they, even though he had an insurance policy that paid out like $800,000 or something like that, the amount of spots he fell in the draft cost him like $20 million because he got hurt. And there's examples of that. So I don't know how you solve the problem from college football's perspective if you want to solve the problem. Or if you just say, hey, it's a business decision, we support the kids, and this is what you're going to get.
Well, our guy Hal Snarr tweeted out yesterday that they should get rid of all these bowl games and just expand the playoffs. I'm not in favor of that. If anything, the first round of the playoffs were the argument against expanding them.
Yeah.
There needn't be so darn many of them for starters. You know, all they really are is our studio productions at this point. The attendance is generally low. They just exist to fill time in an otherwise fairly slow time of the sports broadcasting year for anything that's not the NFL. And I just don't, you know, I don't see the point to having them anymore, not when you have a playoff.
Well, also, Kevin, you can see even in these games that the Irish win, the playoff games or the big bowl games, when you start playing at that age, you see, I'm going to try and make this coherent, that there's a reason why Alabama only plays two or three really big games a year. And every one of these big games where guys are really busting their ass every play, how many people get hurt on both sides every game? It's three or four. It's not nobody. We're starting with a sport. I mean, you and I, you haven't done it in a while, though I could talk you into if you were close. You and I, we still go out and play softball at some level. You know, I mean, we might get a courtesy runner. We're not sprinting around the bases. We're not that stupid. But at some level, I mean, arguably, somebody 35 years old can go play a pickup game of basketball. And if he's in decent shape, the game is not that far different, really, than an NBA game. Obviously, you're not soaring above the rim, but nobody.
Yeah, except for the ball not going through the basket nearly as often.
What I'm saying is, this, even at age 30 or 35, if you're in shape, you can go play touch football without any real thought of, it isn't like somebody, you know, couldn't break an ankle. I mean, you can break an ankle falling off a curb, too. There's no tremendous thought that, you know, I have a 20% chance of coming out of here not walking. I mean, you don't feel that way. Even in basketball at age 35, 40, I don't feel that way in Sunday softball. I mean, I know that I'm not going to be sliding into home plate, but you know what I'm saying? But a game of tackle football with as minimal equipment as these guys can wear, none of more knee pads, everywhere is spikes on artificial surface, you maximize the amount of contact. I mean, you can't wait to get a fresh player up against a player who's winded. I mean, it's the entire thing is orchestrated to essentially beat people up. It is not a game that anybody would normally on a Sunday afternoon, hey, Kevin, let's go out and play tackle football at age 40. It ain't happening. So, I mean, it's a totally different contest than any other sport we play here. You can play handball at 75, right, or racquetball. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about a game that at that level, somebody probably is going to come out of there on a cart, which is another story. How come these assholes can't even afford a cart for these guys? You see the guy in Clemson? They had a guy under his shoulder. He hopped all the way to the locker room with another guy holding his leg up. What's that all about? These guys can't even afford a cart?
Yeah, that was an odd moment.
Yeah. Do we even care about these college kids? I mean, it really comes down to it. I mean, the pros, if you were from the moon, the moon of Venus or someplace that all of a sudden has people in it, if you watch a pro game versus a college game, it would be obvious instantly that the people in the pros care more about their players than the people in college. Or am I just being nasty on the second of the year here? I mean, it's quite obvious that the people in the pros, obviously they're paying these people, they care more about their quarterbacks, you can't touch them. College, you can blast anybody you want. Anyway, I'm just saying. I mean,
well, and college has changed the rules. It's just so unevenly enforced.
Yes.
And then You know, when somebody does get blasted and there's no penalty called, you know, I don't see athletic directors out there just raising hell about it.
No.
And they should be.
Right.
They should be standing up for their guys, and I just don't see it.
Well, I mean, how does Kelly or Notre Dame or even everybody who's on ESPN, if Frank is right, and I haven't checked this out, that and Frank is usually right, that you, when it comes down to this drug testing, you take a random sample of 10 people and you test them. Well, for God's sake, if 3 of the people at Clemson out of the 10 test positive, how does that not put a yellow tape around the locker room and those people's dorm rooms and say, where'd you get this crap?
I mean, or how does that not cause you to say, oh, maybe we better go back and test the rest of the team?
Yeah, and at what level?
You know, something should trigger additional testing. It's not, well, we tested our 10 guys, got 3, goodbye.
Well, plus, how is it that you know, horse racing, you test the horse and the jockey at the end of the race. If they fail, you don't get the money. I mean, this is not new in human events, Kevin. I mean, right? I mean, it's
not, but what, you know, look, this is what they want to do is create the image of concern for it. There is not actual concern.
No, and how much do these guys in these football factories, really, which are these colleges, how much do they really care about? I think in some way, at the big factories, they know the kids are getting paid. The uncle's got the pickup truck or something. And I don't think they probably don't care, but I mean, you're right. I mean, do you think that, by the way, Kevin, you are Kevin. Maddie brought up the numbers. Maddie, you heard that from the guy on the TV, the number about the Notre Dame guy, Smith?
Yeah.
You think those numbers are right, Kevin? They basically claim that he was out of the first round and
the second
round.
I mean, those draft picks are slotted, so the number's right. Just.
Yeah, so you know, he would have been a top 5 pick.
Yeah, so it was consensus.
So be conservative and figure out what the number 5 pick is, and then figure out what he got, and there you go.
It doesn't mean he can't make up the majority of that in his second contract, but now you're still risking injury for these next couple of years until he gets out of his rookie contract.
I don't think he ever make that.
But they know for a fact that his rookie contract, that money's gone.
So his insurance. Russell, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing okay.
He threatened to call him, but here he is. But bad news is he has no iced coffee, unless he brought his own.
I brought my own.
All right, well. So, Kevin, the insurance policy at the time, a couple of years ago, it was an unusual policy because it paid, if he wasn't in the first round, I thought it was more than $700,000 because he dropped in the first or the second round, right? If he wouldn't have been drafted at all, he'd have gotten multiple millions or what was some...
He would have gotten more of an insurance payout, but then, of course, there's probably some kind of clawback if he wound up getting healthy later and played.
So the insurance company coughed up $700,000 or $800,000 because he fell to the second round. Correct?
That's how I remember it, yeah.
And then, so he went... And Dallas was way out there on a limb by taking him in the second round. I mean, nobody else wanted him. He was, again, you know more about this. The injury was so severe to his knee that didn't he have nerve damage? And they didn't even know if the nerve.
They were worried about nerve damage. Whether he, you know, how much he had, I don't remember. But it was multiple tears at the same time, which is always a big challenge.
Yeah. Well, you're putting, you know, you don't even have three left to hold the one you put back together. You know, you're.
Yeah, I'm reading the an article from that time, 2016, when Jalen Smith took out the insurance policy, and it said that it would pay him $5 million if he got hurt and could never play again, or $5 million if he got hurt and slipped out of the draft entirely. Otherwise, it would pay him $700,000 if he falls out of the first round, and then $100,000 for each additional spot he fell in the second round, third round, fourth round, etc.
So he went like second.
So he went like early in the second round. Yeah. So he only got paid like, you know, $700,000, and it, and they figured by if he would have been a top 5 pick, as everyone said he would have been, it cost him like $20 million.
And he had to sit out. Now the year he sat out, did he get paid for that?
Oh, I'm sure when he signed a contract with Dallas, it paid him something. Yes, it. You know, there, first of all, there's a rookie minimum, there's a minimum salary, so he got at least that, and I'm sure they, you know, he got at least a signing bonus, and I don't know how much the contract was contingent on him playing, other than, you know, like all NFL contracts, there is no guaranteed money, so, other than what you get for signing the bonus and for, you know, being on a roster a certain year. But the out years are not guaranteed, although salary cap implications come into play on it. So in his case, you know, I'm sure they paid him something, or else he wouldn't have signed a contract with them.
Yeah, he signed a 4-year contract with worth $6.5 million, and $2.9 of that was guaranteed. So he made, that year he set out, he made $1.6 million.
Okay.
Plus you got the $700,000 insurance check.
Which is different.
So now I know we get a lot of people who will be sitting here saying, well, you know, poor baby, he only got $1.6 million plus that, you know, plus the insurance check. Got him the two, I'm sure. But that's not really the point. The point is that it cost him a whole lot of money. And it's easy to scoff when it's other people's money, but, you know, fact of the matter is, it did cost him, and it was substantial.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you were Russell. Did you ever go to this place, Kevin? The place with the, we used to go there on Friday nights once in a while. Pool table. They had a pool table where, I remember the one night, they get a load of this, Russell. This little fat guy was playing pool, and he whacked the cue ball so hard, the cue ball and two object balls all left the table.
Okay.
Pretty good. Yeah. Anyway, in there was a
that
big.
Pretty good. So you're saying the bar with the pool table, and I'm supposed to know which one that is, right?
It was a. They had fish fries on Friday night. We went there a couple times. Anyway.
Oh, the bar that has fish fries on Friday night.
The one in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
All right, I'll narrow it down even more. They had a big poster behind the bar that said, "Remember, everybody in the world except you is overpaid."
Okay.
Is that where you were going with all of this?
Yeah, how true is that?
I mean, that's pretty good.
I mean, like, right, the guy from Notre Dame who's a starter his first year, maybe would have been an all-pro his first year. The guy's supposed to accept $1 million instead of $20 million because $1 million's a lot to you, right? Because so that's the attitude. He's making more than me, so I'd go play for free, or that, you know, that kind of stuff. It is. If you read about the Major League Baseball and the history, and the how they basically used to own teams, own people. Our buddy Dak wrote his master's. What's the thesis you make in law school? You do in law school if you want to be on a law review or whatever. You write essentially a PhD thesis, but it's
a dissertation type thing.
Yeah,
it's called something different.
It's called something different if you're in love. Anyway, Dak wrote his on the Major League Reserve Clause. We used to go out all the time as he was doing all the research. He goes, "You wouldn't believe this thing. They you can't get out of this. This is other than being sold into it. Like this is about as close to slavery as you could ever be being an employee. The Major League Reserve contract. I mean, it was they pretty much." You know, owned everybody. I mean, you basically, the line in, with the Pride of the Yankees, you now are the property of the New York Yankees when Walter Brennan said that to Gary Cooper. Talk about true.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about true. But you only have a certain amount of years and you're going to pay for it the rest of your life, Kevin. So I don't begrudge these guys at all. But anyway, in his book I was reading, they said the Major League Baseball players or owners always felt that it was their right to consider it a business, where the players should always consider it as a sport and how lucky they were to play. And I'm not so sure that point of view isn't still there for a lot of people.
Well, I'm sure it is.
You know, the Bears get to act like it's a business, but I'd love to be playing for the Bears, so if I made 48 cents, I'd be out there, so this guy's got no business sniveling for $1 million versus two.
Well, and remember, you know, it's really, really common for fans to, you know, talk about the overpaid players and how pampered they are and so on, and then as soon as somebody is allowed to go rather than sign a bigger contract or a free agency contract, then they say the owners are cheap.
Yeah. Well, fans
are a fickle lot.
Well, when people were on the trading floor, when there was trading floors, way back in the 80s and 90s where people were making good money, people really begrudged people that money. And I'd say, well, you know, guy takes a lot of risk. What do you mean? I said, why don't you explain to me the last time you went to work and it, when you walked out of work, you had less money than when you walked in. And they said, well, it never happens. I said, well, it happens to these guys.
That's how I talked the college kids out of being out of betting traders.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why everyone's a banker.
I had neighbors who, back in the 80s, who were commodity traders. And, they'd come home and the wife would say every day, well, did you have a good day? Well, the translation of that was, did you make money or did you lose
money
today?
Oh, yeah. Well, what else could it be? I mean, she's not asking about what he had for lunch. I mean...
Where it wasn't, was everybody nice today? What fun things happened at work? It was not that. That wasn't it. When most of us go home, and somebody says, did you have a good day? It was yeah, everything went great today. People were nice. We worked on a cool project. Whatever it is, that's not what that means when you're a trader.
Well, when the wife started calling the floor, people got a little older and it. A lot of the guys started getting married because everybody kind of grew up together. When the ladies were calling you at noon asking you how you were doing, that got a little much. Hey, Kevin, the article you just wrote, I think
Why?
We tweeted
What store are you in?
Yeah. The article you just wrote about basketball, you got a minute and a half. How about give us a little summary?
Well, the little summary is I just sort of covered the opening parts of the basketball season for Notre Dame. They have an interesting squad to watch this year because they're so young. They have it's normal for a team to have to add in two or three players every year because two or three leave. They're trying to integrate six new players this year, and in the process, not only did they start out young, but they had Elijah Burns, one of their upperclassmen, decided to leave the team and transfer, and he's graduating, so he's hoping to actually play the second semester at Siena. And Rex Pfluger, their four-year starter, tore his ACL in the Purdue game, and he's done. And Robbie Carmody, one of their freshmen, had to have his shoulder surgery, so he's done, and it's just it's an interesting look at how teams get built over the course of a season, and in this case, are they going to be able to pull it together? With they're talented and they'll be good, they'll be really good next year, but are they? Is there enough there for them to really pull it off this season and get themselves at least an NCAA tournament bid? So, this is kind of the opening story of the season as I've written it. And I'll be writing, pretty much every week the rest of the conference season at this point. So, I'm trying to just start telling that story. And, it's what I like to do, to look at leadership, to look at team development. Those are topics that I teach in classes as well, and I just think it's nice in the sports world that is on display for us all to observe.
One word answer, Kevin. Do you think with the seemingly explosion of these basketball games, even though they only count tournaments as one game, even though you could play four, or even the football thing when we're up to how many games? Were there enough scholarships? They got enough people.
For basketball, I think they generally do. It's unusual to get as many injuries as they have because basketball doesn't have that many season-ending injuries. So I would say that's unusual. The real unusual was the Notre Dame women last year who were down really to, an iron six type of rotation because they had four ACL tears. But it's not normal to have to have more than two, and there's been a rash. I don't know what it is in South Bend, but they had, they had three of them last year. Because one of the problems they have integrating players at this point is also DJ Harvey was a freshman last year, and he's just now starting to find his legs, so to speak, after a microfracture injury and knee surgery. From last January, so when I say they're integrating six, they're more or less integrating seven new guys.
Well, I'm going to lob this one out there, Kevin. We'll let you go. I never heard of an ACL tear when people wore Converse All Stars. Just saying.
Okay, I'll let you run with that.
I'm just saying.
I don't know what to make of it, though.
I don't know what to make of it either. I'm just saying.
Or maybe we just knew that the guy lost his burst of speed, and we didn't really deal with the ACL tears as well back then, because now we can actually fix them. I remember injuring my knee in high school and having the orthopedic surgeon say that the surgery would be more traumatic than the injury itself.
Maybe we come back from break. I'll regale you. I think I might have one of the first arthroscopes in the guy's office. Anyway, Kevin, thank you very much. Talk to you on Friday, bud. SP Futures,
okay.
we're still down like 30 points. We'll let everybody off a full 37. So we're going the wrong way now. We're rallying a little bit. Now we're not. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Russell Rhodes in the office. Exactly. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Everybody managed to survive the New Year's Eve and all that good stuff. And I guess, you know what? I'm going to say I had a hunch we should come in short this morning, Russell, but I did not do it. I had no idea it would be down 38 points S&P, 352 Dow, 136 on the NASDAQ. We had a lousy December, and we picked on up on it the last 3 days of the year. We had the serious rallies Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, where we brought back a lot of what we were losing in December, but still had a 6% really down on the year across the averages. First down year in like quite a while. I was talking earlier that somebody from CNBC writes that this all traces back to a PBS comment from Chairman Powell that in October that we were kind of a ways away from normal.
They're stretching on that.
Oh, they're stretching on it. Well, I mean, sometimes, and again, I've grilled you a million times like I do every one of the guests.
Uh-huh.
And the big weakness in, well, certainly in my game, and I think in most people's game, going back to August of 82 when you knew things were just way one directional and it was going to go back the other way. You're always early, picking the day. I mean, this has been an 8-year deal with the Fed pouring this money into the place.
Right.
And why October 3rd was the day?
Well, we don't know why October the 3rd was the day, but one of the great comments I heard about this, look at that, they're going to save the market right now.
Yep.
But one of the great comments I heard about this was, if you had 8 years of what they did, or however many years of what they did to make sure the markets were okay, if you needed to do that to make things good, if you stop doing it, it's going to make some things bad as well. And I think that's you know where we're going with it. Now the exact we never know why it's the exact day. Maybe in hindsight we can come up with the exact day. I don't think we've really been able to figure out.
Well, we're going back and we're trying to look for it, but
yeah. It's like any of the bowl games that we watched yesterday. I mean, if there's a key play that completely turned the tide, afterwards we can figure out what that was. But at the time, it's pretty. If we could figure it out at the time, I'd be calling in for my boat.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's better than October 3rd. Russell spent 5 minutes in the can instead of his usual three.
I know. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it's all of a sudden. Well, the market was roiled on that, as was
they
Russell.
Worried about my health.
Yeah, worried about something. But I mean, you go back and but then how long it stays on that? Now we also had the tariff game was ramping up at the time. It was starting to become obvious in October that we weren't going to get any agricultural sales,
mm-hmm.
and we had what was the quarter that we had second quarter, second or third that we had
end of the third.
What was the year we had the GDP over 4? Was it?
Was it second?
I think it might
going
been.
Into the summer. And might have been, everybody might have said been. That the second half things would start to slow because you know it was artificially inflated due to the tax cuts.
Well, it also was. I mean, I've never obviously agriculture is big business in this country, mm-hmm. But it's never. It's usually steady enough to where it's never. I'm going to say really that much of a news item.
Right.
Yet, a lot of the stuff I read about that 4.2, 4.3, whatever it was that quarter, was that a full 0.8% was in shipments overseas to try and get ahead of the tariffs. And it was, stuff pulled ahead a quarter. And, you start reading stuff like that. It's not surprising that in an October day, I was ranting earlier, so I won't do it again. It's too technical for people to listen to twice. I this whole trick bag of these mortgages the Fed got themselves into, God bless it, Russell. It should have been predictable. It was not a good thing to do. I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't control the runoff. You can't control the money people are throwing back at you.
No.
But all you cared about was saving those banks instead of saving the homeowner, saving the system. We have to save those guys.
Right, because without those guys, everybody else falls apart.
Right. The fact that we let them, you know, let's see, it was...
First
National Bank became Chase, became J.P. Morgan Chase. J.P. Morgan, did they take over Manny Hanny or City of New York? How many banks are in there now? Like six?
As far as big behemoth...
Too
big to fail. We all know who those banks are. Banks.
Well, in Chicago, when I first came down here to trade, and when I was in college, I'm going to say we had six real banks
that were Chicago banks, not national banks that had a Chicago presence.
Right. We had Continental. We had
I don't think we really have.
We don't have any, do we?
Yeah. Not that I can think of.
Nobody has a spot here. Northern Trust.
Yeah. Northern's not one of the
They want to be a trust bank. They're one of the few that are left in that business, and they make a lot of money in that business, and they're good at it.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if you.
They're a good rich people bank.
Yeah, but if you walked in the front door and you want to open up a checking account with $5,000, will they even do it?
Northern.
Yeah,
I don't know. They moved out of my neighborhood, so I moved over to Chase.
Plus they don't have any branches. You never see a Northern.
They did. Well, no, they had a branch around the corner from me, and they closed it, and Chase opened the branch.
They're not big on branches. But there must be a lot of money still in that trust stuff.
You know what Northern does that, without diving too much into what I know, Northern is very much the banker to extremely wealthy people.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of celebrities, believe it or not. Even though they're out in California, they'll use Northern Trust as their. There are a couple bankers that live out in the neighborhood I live in that spend a lot of time out in California talking to people that they're not allowed to name.
Oh yeah, one of your old compadres that used to be at the exchange with you.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say his name, but Mr. Schmoo, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
he used to work at PTI. He traded for me for a long time. And so I won't say the last name, but Marty somehow gets us an audience with this guy was it Bessemer Bank?
Uh-huh.
Same bank that, was it Silas Keene came from there? I don't know, whatever. But it's one of these old-line, blue-blood, managed, you know, the rich people's money banks.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know if they had a downstairs where they had a teller. They might have had one, you know, type of thing. So you go upstairs... And we were just putting together the Protect the Next program.
Yeah.
And I said that a long conversation with the guy, and the guy knew his options. He's a pretty bright guy. And he said, we have this system, and we've had this track record, and blah, blah, blah. And we're on the way down, where we soften the blow, and on the way up, it really runs up. We probably don't do quite as well, but at least we're, you know, for most people, especially if they're not 25 years old, this is a way better book of returns for them than just, you know, if you're up, you're up. If you're down, you're down, type of thing.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, except for one thing. And I go, what's that? He goes, we've trained our people that way. That if the market's down 20 and we're down 19, we had a great year. And if it's up 20, we made 21, we had a great year. We don't want to get involved in this other stuff. It's too complicated. We've trained our people to like those returns. Trained. I like that. And he said that there was a big floor of people. He said, we have three people here to manage people's money.
Mm-hmm.
All the rest of these people manage all the rest of their crap. We pay the maid. We pay the Visa card for the trust fund kids. We do all that stuff. We pay the rent. He goes, all those people take care of all that crap for these rich people. He goes, if I was going to do what you want to do in 20 accounts, I need 10 people like you. I don't have them. I don't want them. We got them trained into just what you get. I'm sure for the last 8 years, the guy was a hero. Marketed nothing but go straight up. Because all of it is in maintaining, you know, whatever these trust people do. If somebody's got a maid, then it goes to the trust. The bill goes. I mean, I was never, Manny Weber might have been brought up today. Were you, Manny? You sent the bill to the trust? I'm thinking that. But, I don't even know anybody like that, do you? But they're around, evidently. But I think Northern does a lot of that.
I've always thought that was just like one kid named Richie Rich, and everybody else was, and it was just fiction.
Yeah, well, no, but
I guess there are people that live like that. They don't hang out with me.
No, they're.
I used to deliver pizza to their house every once in a while.
they earned their money the old-fashioned way.
Closest I got.
They inherited it, you know.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not so bad. But so we've got this year.
Not so bad for them.
No.
No.
Well, I mean, but then they have other issues.
You know? Oh yeah.
All the stuff that we think are cool about life, they don't have a lot. Yeah. Not all, but some. Don't you hate it when your yacht, you know, needs an air filter or something and it doesn't run? It's terrible.
And the only place you can get the air filter from is, you know, somewhere on the other side of the world.
Yeah, somebody's yacht club or whatever. But the God. So Russell, as an economist, we come off last year. We have I'm going to lob out what my views are, and then you tell me where I'm wrong. We have a very bifurcated economy. I think a lot of people never left the recession. Some people did. Asset prices went back up. If you were lucky to take the money and run in a few spots, you know, you're fine. If you were a seller of Amazon at 2100, I guess you did pretty well, or even 19 or 18. But it, to me, middle America never really got up off the dime.
I think the way I want to stop you on that one because you'll get going and I'll forget this
part. Right.
But I think the way it used to work cycle wise was middle America would have, you know, 3 to 5 really good years, and then, you know, they'd live under a cloud for a year or two and then cycle back. And I think the worrisome cloud has pretty much gone away, but it hasn't, it's never swung to the point ever since 2008. It hasn't swung to the point where everybody's feeling good all the time. You know, I think everybody's kind of like looking over their shoulder, what's going to catch up with me? Nobody really got beyond living check to check. And it's been a constant decade of grind. You know what I mean? As opposed to ever really being able to catch your breath.
How much of that, we have, you know, various, obviously, people, different walks of life that are on the show. And I'll tell you what, one thing was nice about 2018, and you're part of this, Russell, a big part of it. I don't know when, Maddie, we've had a gang of people on the show that are as good as they are now. I mean, in terms of different coming up, me not just coming up with stuff that people comment on, where they come up with stuff that you and I are like, wow, boy, glad we had that guy on, or that lady on.
Not only that, but they can offer some sort of insight on pretty much any topic,
yep.
Which the ability to spread to all fields is rare, I think.
And control me a little bit, too, which is always good.
Well, yeah, you got to rein you in.
Yes.
Keep one guy on topic.
That's hard for me.
It's not easy.
You know, the weird part is
when
I had George Stigler for class.
Uh-huh.
I'm not comparing myself to Nobel Prize winner, but he would always start something. Then he realized that before he went down that road, there was a road he didn't cover, and he'd back up. Then he'd back up. Then he'd back up. And I'm sitting there one day, and I go, God, if I ever get like that, just shoot me. And I'm getting like that.
So he'd be 45 minutes into something and never got to the original
topic. Never got to the original topic.
You know what? I generally avoid reading my students' feedback on me, but I got one of those this past semester.
Well, I mean,
I wanted to learn the basics of finance. What was this guy talking about?
But I understand why you get there, especially me talking to essentially a listenership that I think is probably way above most. But still, when I lob in, or if I start at like M2, you know, I got to say, whoa, I got to back up and say, what the hell is M2?
They don't even give it to us anymore.
Yeah, yeah, they do.
I thought they stopped giving us the
H6 you get every week.
Money supply. Okay.
But I end up backing up on definitions, so I forget what I was even going, where I was even going.
Mm-hmm.
But here's one for you. What we did see, certainly on the Fed level, and again, I'm ragging about them big time about the mortgages, which I think is a self-inflicted wound. But then again, it wasn't for us. It was to save the banks. Their job is now not saving the country. It's saving the banks.
Mm-hmm.
They've equated the system to those four people. And that, to me, is a major mistake. But I dug this out last week, and Kevin was opining on it a little bit. In 2008, now if you go to zero interest rates, okay, you would think, now if you're doing this to help people out, right, which was never their goal in one, how do you go with credit card rates are actually up on the decade?
That's unexplainable. But you can always get around how can you get around the rates going higher? There's people are always offering if you manage those things well.
You're gonna go time shanty on us. If you dig around and switch from one to the other, but every time you switch, they're taking 3%. Right, your initial.
I don't know because I don't shop around like that.
If they say
I try to pay my card off.
Okay, but if you don't, if they say zero interest rates to April of 2020, you'll say it's going to be a 3% hit on the move.
Okay,
which still is a good deal compared to 20. But what I'm saying is, in
you make that up in 2 months
in 2007 or so. I don't know why, but I had a credit card with somebody, and the place went out of business. The bank went out of business. So I went online, and I said, okay, I want a low-interest credit card. And there was one. I got USA Bank for 7%.
Okay.
And I didn't have a balance or anything, but I'm thinking one of these days I might. You never know. So I want this thing. Now you cannot find one for less than 13.9 anywhere. In the meantime, the banks, the interest rates have gone from, they went from at the time probably
before 2008.
Before 2008. The risk-free rate was probably, what, 3?
It was about 3 to 4.
So, okay.
I was working with because this is what I do on New Year's Day. I was working with the risk-free numbers to do something.
Okay.
They were in the 3 to 4 range in 2007. 2008, they went to 0, and now we're up in the 2 to 3 range.
All right, so the average interest rate on all credit card accounts in 2008 was... Wait for it. 11.93 in November 12th. So let's say 12%. Fast forward to 18, we're 14.1. So wouldn't you think that if you gave a rat's behind about anybody, when you drop the bank's rate from 3 down to 3 or 4 down to a half of 1, that you would say, hey, by the way, bleeps, make sure you pass some of this along.
You got it in. They didn't do that.
No, they went the other
way. We've been through it in a different way more than once.
And I never saw this chart before, right? Yeah. I actually prove it to myself.
Well, we knew it. Now we know it for sure.
So how is it?
We've empirically figured it out.
But the thought of getting one at 7%, you're not even close. You're double that. Now, wouldn't you think, this is, if I could put my finger in, everything that's in my world is wrong with the economic world right now is that we continue every day, every week, it seems, to have an industry drop out of competition. And I think there's nothing better than an economy where people compete, and yet when every industry, maybe this is just the evolution of getting up the behind of congressmen or whatever it is, all these different places that drop out of competition. You can't tell me that would people being able to absorb, giving people no interest, and oh, by the way, charging them for a bunch of stuff in banks, so your expense for money is like zero. Wouldn't you think somewhere there'd be the Russell, Maddie, and Chief Bank out of, bum behind Utah or someplace that says for people with an 800 credit score, I'll give you a credit card at 7%. Wouldn't you think somebody would break rank, and nobody does?
Well, what ends up happening is the people that you would want to give those kind of cards to are getting non-advertised rates like that from the bank that they bank at.
I think they're piling into rewards cards and then taking their money that way.
Yep, that's what I do. That's kind of where I'm at with all of that. But you're not going to make any money off of them anyway because they're paying it off every month.
But wouldn't you think though?
And I think they'd rather have a mix of people that are not 800. Scores where you jack them on interest, every month and then compound that interest.
But you realize what you're saying, okay? When you know this is not a shot at the Russell. I would never.
No.
You're acting like what you just said is what's happening. Mm-hmm. They, whoever the they are making these determinations. If things are competitive, you don't get to make the determination. You don't get to say, I want $4 for my soybeans when the guy down the block says, I'm $3.90, screw you. Or you don't get to put, $2.75 up for gasoline, all of a sudden the guy down the block is $2.50. Hey, what about that guy? In other words, you're implying some sort of control. There shouldn't be any control is my point.
There's a limited number of the guys that are out there issuing the cards.
Well,
that's exactly
my point.
I mean, go to, you know, to a, I'm trying to think, go to a, like one of the big banks, like go to the Chase site and look at the number, the variety of credit cards that they offer there.
But they're all going to all come back to the same place.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where I'm going with that. Or, you know, Capital One, the exact same thing. That you go, if you look at the ridiculous, because we, the reason I know it with Chase is we switched from Northern to Chase, and I was looking through all the different credit, I already had a Chase card, so it didn't really make that much of a difference, but I was looking through the ridiculous offerings that they, it's just, every kind of niche card that you could imagine. Well, hell, I'm you'll love this. You're getting ready to learn something new about Russell. I'm a member of the Minor League Baseball Alumni Association, and there's a Chase card for that.
You played.
I did not play. I worked for a team.
Okay.
I don't want you to get hung up on that.
So, well, I'm going to say, who knows? You could have played for a year. Why not?
No, trust me, I couldn't have.
All right, but what I'm saying is when you saw Capital One first starting out to become a national brand.
Yeah.
When you saw U.S. Bank, which is the one I got. Mm-hmm. I mean, they wanted to become a national. But then now they just fall right back in. Why should we compete? Let's just drop into, well, we'll pay $1 billion for commercials, okay, mm-hmm. and but we'll charge the same rate as everybody else. Instead of, you would think that, you know, for instance, like Lakeside Bank used to be just right here in the building, and all of a sudden they got, you know, 7 or 8 branches. Someday they want to get their nose up a little more. You would think that they would say, okay, for people with 700 scores or over, well, we'll do 8.5% or 9. It doesn't even have to be cheap. I mean, it could be 10. It's a long way from 13.9. And you would think that somebody would do that, but they don't. Now, the question is why. The Visa won't let them? There's a discipline there someplace? I mean, something weird's happening because...
I don't know. Why do all the airlines basically charge the exact same...
There's only 4 of them.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Why do they, you know, why does it cost almost exactly the same to fly to New York on United, American, or Delta?
The only time there's a little competition of Southwest flies there.
Yep. That's absolutely true.
But I mean, so the point being is if we want any kind of competition, we sort of have to try and maintain it somehow. And I don't know how we do that. S&P futures still down, where are we? Just still down 35. Dow might be down as much as 400. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks, with the full list.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure.
But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Russell Rhodes, man, one of you guys is somewhat of a jinx. We came in and the S&Ps were down 35. They rallied up to down 25. Now we're down 43, looking like we're sinking like a rock here, Russell. What the buy the dippers have already gotten spanked this morning, and it's only 7 o'clock or 7:30. SP's down 43, Dow futures down 397, pushing 400, and the NASDAQ down 145. We're up 3 days. I don't know if that's part of the issue, but also the Chinese manufacturing numbers, I guess on reflection, showed a contraction in December, and what's that, the first time in 9 years, Russell, something like that, they actually had a contraction? Whatever it wasn't good. We're down in Europe, but not as much as you would think. DAX down 17.2%, FTSE down 44.7%, CAC around taking a hit, down 61.3%. Over in Asia, again, kind of odd numbers. Nikkei down 62%. Now, they were closed on Monday. Shanghai down 28.1%. Hang Seng down 7.15%, 3%. So I'm guessing they're probably just opening today. These other guys were probably open yesterday. I'll get that a little bit. I'll look that up. Oil down 70 cents. Brent down 69 cents. Oil 44.71. Natural gas under $3, 2.97. What a ride.
That didn't take long, did it?
No, 272 to 454, back down to 297. RBOB 128. And heating oil 166. Gold on a rally, however, up 6.39. Silver down 6 cents. Gold hits a multi-month high. Equities, as people are worried about their equities, and a little bit of a flight to quality, which is good. I'm long gold. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're nice and quiet, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Obviously, with the kids being out for school this week and a lot of people extending their vacation, we are light on traffic volume. So even though most of us are back to work today, not everyone, it would appear. We're looking good on the Edens and Kennedy. Normal traffic volumes, actually lighter than normal on the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. So enjoy a nice, quiet commute. It is dark, overcast, and cloudy out there, but no snow or ice or rain in the forecast. So it's just not going to be any sunshine. We'll go up to a high of 33. Right now it's overcast and 31 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, lots of sunshine today with a high of 54. Right now it's clear and 33. In sports, Blackhawks played the Winter Classic yesterday, New Year's Day. This time it was in Notre Dame Stadium, and it looked pretty cool from television. But the Blackhawks lost. Bruins broke a tie in the third period and pulled away, winning 4-2 in that one. Bulls and Suns were both off yesterday. Bulls are in action against the Magic later on. College football bowl games, it was a busy day yesterday. That saw Iowa beat Mississippi State in the Outback Bowl 27-22. Penn State lost to Kentucky 27-24 in the Citrus Bowl. LSU beat UCF, ending their undefeated season 40-32 in the Fiesta Bowl. UCF rallied back late to make it interesting. Ohio State had a huge lead the entire game, then were outscored 20-0 in the fourth quarter, but they held on to beat Washington in the Rose Bowl 28-23. And the nightcap was the Sugar Bowl, and it was Texas with the biggest upset of the day. They beat
Georgia, who a lot of people thought should have been in the playoff, 28-21. Lastly, college hoops, it was Notre Dame getting blown out at Virginia Tech, 81-66. Jay.
Two things. As you are our meteorologist, and the gloomometer was yesterday, could have been, it can't have been too many days ever gloomier. Did the light ever get above, like, dark dusk or what?
It was very gloomy yesterday. It was foggy, it was overcast, it was cold and damp, and just, it rained, what, New Year's Eve, it rained the entire day.
Yep.
And then yesterday, it was just wet and damp and just, yeah, it was dreary. The last few days.
Better, day inside and watch football.
Better than five below in snow, but.
That was perfect.
Yeah, the fact that we didn't have a snowstorm like we seem to do every New Year's, so that was nice.
So what did you have to do to your poor dog? I mean, I took the guys out around the block and I damn near had to give him a bath. It was nothing but mud and dirt everywhere. I mean, ugh.
Well, he's tall enough at least that he doesn't get muddy when he's out there, just his paws, so you have to wipe his paws down. But yeah, we would wait till the rain would let up just a little bit, and then we'd take him for a quick walk around the block. But he's, as long as we're home, he's happy just to hang out. He doesn't need to go outside very long when it's raining.
That's about the truth. What else did I want to ask you, man? He was the bowl games yesterday. I don't know. I'm not sure where those things are going. But you know, they never really, when you say they're not worth much, they never really were worth much. Matter of fact, back in the day, they used to figure out who the national champion was before he even went to the bowls.
Very often, yeah.
And mm-hmm. But they were just this New Year's Day sort of extravaganza that everybody sort of loved. And when there were only about four of them, I mean, four or five of them, and then they got bigger and bigger and bigger. What do you think the numbers actually are in some of these, Chuck E. Cheese Bowl and so forth, and these off towns? Where there's, what do you figure there are? 10,000 people or maybe?
Oh, there. I mean, even the Fiesta Bowl, the LSU UCF, there were a lot of empty seats.
The place holds 80-some thousand.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a huge stadium, but there were an awful lot of empty seats in that one. And if you look at the bowls, you know, the mid December ones, you could have a whole section to yourself.
So you have certain teams that travel really well.
Yeah.
In the Midwest, certainly Notre Dame travels really well. Wisconsin, Iowa, those teams travel really well. Michigan, when they're in a big bowl, will travel well. Same with Ohio State. If they're in a bowl that they consider themselves above, they will not travel well.
Yeah.
But even in spite of that, when you watch those games, outside of the playoff and then maybe the Rose Bowl, none of them are sold out. I'm convinced none of them are sold out.
No.
The
Rose Bowl's always packed, though.
Oh, yeah. The Rose Bowl's like, we were actually in Los Angeles 3 years ago on vacation, and we were staying in a hotel where there were a lot of tour groups going to the Rose Bowl. And it's like a bucket list thing for a lot of people.
That might have been the one I went to. I went to the Rose Bowl.
It probably was because Iowa was in it.
Yeah, it was Iowa Stanford.
Yeah, and I went there. Stanford cleverly made fun of your band.
Yeah, which was which
that's all I really remember about that game.
Did you go to the game?
I didn't, but like I said, the hotel we were staying in was all Iowa people.
So what I remember the most about it, one, it was really fun. It was it was just a first class event. It was 72 degrees. They have this huge golf course right outside the stadium where everyone parks and everyone tailgates. And the Iowa fans, of course, hadn't been to a Rose Bowl since the early 90s, so they traveled like huge, like big time. Stanford, it's a shorter trip. They'd been there a few times. It was probably, I would say, 80% Iowa fans, 20% Stanford fans. There was the stealth bomber flyover, which was insane to see in person because you literally can't hear it, and it's right there. It goes right above you, and you can't hear. I mean, that was stunning. Then Christian McCaffrey, who has gone on to be an NFL star, scored like 5 touchdowns in every possible way in the first half. He had a punt return, a kick return, a run, and a catch. I mean, it was
he's like the white Johnny Rogers.
He had he broke the all-purpose yards record in Rose Bowl history. And it was 35-7 at the beginning of the second quarter, and I looked at my friend like, what just happened? Like, let's go get a beer. This sucks. Yeah. We ended up leaving in the third quarter because the game was so boring. But the band thing that Russell alluded to, apparently the Stanford band is known for mocking the opposing team at halftime when they perform, and that's sort of their
thing. Well, they don't have any lines or anything. They just run around, right?
They just kind of run around and dress in costumes and make fun of whatever team they're playing against.
Yeah.
Well, Iowa being, a Midwestern sort of agricultural, even though they're actually not an agricultural school, that's Iowa State, but Iowa's more of a liberal arts, journalism, medical school. But anyway, they mocked the fans for being, farmers. And it was, I didn't really care. Like, it didn't bother me. I don't care. But some people got really pissed about it.
That's why I remember it.
Yeah, and they were just,
there was
like
a little blowback.
They thought it was, like, classless and blah, blah, blah. The only thing that I thought was funny, it was, like, California is, like, 10 times the agricultural state as Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and they were just making fun of, like, you know, farmers.
Well, Stanford, like, doesn't. That's the other California.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so, like, downstate Illinois. It's like,
right. I was like, they're making fun of Iowa as a state when California is, you know, much more of an agricultural state than Iowa. But anyway, the actual results on the field sucked from my perspective. But everything
but
else
the
about
experience.
The Rose Bowl was amazing, and I would recommend everyone going at least once.
Do you think that there's anybody out there, as they used to say, that has a list of all the bowls and the amount of tickets that were forced to be bought by the schools that were turned back in? And I guess what I'd like to see is if you sent Sidewash 6,000 tickets and Slippery Rock 6,000 tickets and 9,000 people showed up, you know, you didn't sell it to anybody else other than the ones that people had to buy them.
Well, it's, you know, I went to University of Memphis and they've gone to 5 bowls the last 5 years in a row. And I'll get an email a day reminding me if I'm going to buy tickets to the game to make sure I buy them through the university.
Well, do you think that they're selling out?
No, I know they're not, because they're hitting me up until the last day, to, you know, so I'm sorry.
Right, so how many,
I mean, you didn't they did last year because they managed to finagle some things and get into the Liberty Bowl, which was basically a home game for them.
You mean you didn't want to go to the Jared Birmingham Bowl?
I did not want to go to the Birmingham Bowl.
Against 8-6 Memphis, against 7-6 Wake Forest?
Nope. And they were 6-6 Wake Forest until they beat Memphis. No. But I'll tell you one thing. Memphis had never been, we'd been to one bowl in the early 70s, and they made the New Orleans Bowl for the first time about, D'Angelo Williams was still on the team. And it was the first time they had made a bowl ever. And you know, I went down to Memphis, picked my dad up, went down to New Orleans with him, and it's kind of like you said, and they won the game as well, but it was just a matter of finally getting over a hump with what has been a traditionally horrible football team. I'll guarantee you there were 2 or 3 schools that were absolutely thrilled to be in whatever bowl they were in this past year.
And Memphis has become a very solid football program over the last several years.
Yeah, gotten better.
I mean, they're consistently in bowl contention, and then occasionally they'll have a year where they win, you know, 9-10 games.
Yep.
At what point, I guess, is it such a loser for the school what the board of directors is going to say? Well, when are the board of directors ever going to spank the football program? They're never going to.
Well, they must get like a big cut from the TV thing or something. There's got to be a reason there's 38 bowls and 3 playoff games.
The reason there's 38 bowls is ESPN. They own a ton of them.
I thought the Rose Bowl was not ESPN, and they were on ESPN.
Yeah, they've been ESPN years now.
Well, they've got a contract with them, but ESPN owns several bowls.
I'm going to say.
And they basically, they can't add another bowl at this point because they bump up against not having enough bowl-eligible teams.
So
it's a made-for-TV. A lot of them are made
for TV. I'm going to say one bowl was not on ESPN. It was last year or the year before?
Yeah, still. The Sun Bowl has been on CBS for like 50 years.
That's the only one?
That's in El Paso. I still believe that's the only bowl game.
It's like the second oldest bowl.
There were a couple that were on Fox.
Yeah.
Not necessarily yesterday, but.
No, yeah, the Northwestern game was on Fox. Yeah. So whatever bowl that is, that's the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl.
Oh, God.
I love how you give the advertising.
Oh, you have to.
Yeah, they paid for it.
Give
it to them.
I just think it's funny to do it because it's ridiculous. But, yeah, that was on Fox, and there was at least one other on Fox. I think, like, 90% of them are on ESPN now.
Yep. And they do. I mean, there's a section of the ESPN site where you can see all the different bowls that they've actually basically put together or have bought into.
All right, so if I can walk through the economics of this somehow, you get to go to a bowl. It means, which doesn't give you any money, it means that your team...
You actually lose money.
Well, your team... Well, that's what I'm trying to get to. Your team gets to practice...
28 more times.
Really? I thought it was like...
Something like that. I heard the number the other day.
I thought it was like
shocked.
3 weeks, but it's...
Maybe you get to
practice the whole week.
That's
before
the huge
the bowl there.
Thing.
Well, it is for the idiot coaches. If they want to practice in April, they'd be doing it. But so you get to practice somewhere between 15 and 30 more times, right? You're probably right. So The coach is going to get some kind of bonus because he made the bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So practice costs you something, you know, whatever it costs. So then you've got your expenses to get there. They're going to ship you, let's say, 10,000 tickets, depending on the bowl, and they're $100 a pop, which maybe they're not, but say they're $100 a pop. If you don't sell them, you got to eat them. So now you've eaten some of those, you got them. Now you got to get your team there, but you're also going to get a chunk of dough from the bowl for showing up. So then you subtract your expenses from that, then you have to share the rest with the league probably. So say it's $1 million, it costs you $500,000 to get there. The other 500,000 goes 50 grand to 10 other teams in the league. But you get the practice, you get to show up, you get to bring your expenses, you try and match your expenses as much as you can. So all the hangers-on, all the alumni to come up with the money and everything, get to get on that plane to get to drink and have shrimp cocktails for free.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't the team in, was it Colorado, Matty, that finally they were pissed at him because whatever bowl they went to it, you know, like the Gator Bowl or something, the team share, I'm going to say, was $3 million. They spent more than $3 million on expenses.
There, yeah. Each year there's a couple dozen teams that actually lose money by going.
But what I'm saying is,
another thing that you'll notice in some of the, and we're really talking about the earlier bowls. One of the things that you'll notice if you're paying close attention is there's no band. There might not even be cheerleaders from school, and that's because they can't afford to get them there.
But what I think what you guys are missing, and I don't think you're actually missing it, but they're obviously doing it for a reason. So they must think they make up that money down the line, whether it's for, you know, exposure or the football program in general or the school enrollment.
Gives you a little credibility.
Some credibility, yeah. Whatever it is. They're doing it for a reason. I mean, if it was a real loser consistently, then why would they do it?
No, I think for a lot of schools.
So I don't really understand the point.
A lot of schools, it's just a flat-ass loser, man.
I mean, why would they do it then?
Because I'm saying the coaches.
No one
coaches are drive to do it. And a lot of your alumni,
they incentivize coaches and give them bonuses for making these bowl games.
The coach is going to tell you, I need those extra weeks practice.
No, that's not it. The coach is going to get $1 million bonus.
Well, but he also,
if he makes a bowl game, or more than that, maybe.
Even if he was getting none, he will
say.
And he'll
get a $3 million bonus if he makes a playoff.
They're going to tell you they need, I'm saying they will tell you they want the practice.
And why would the school put that in the contract if it wasn't a winner for them in the long run?
Because they're idiots.
I just refuse to believe people are that stupid.
Well, I think your people end up fine. Okay, what I'm saying is the expenses from the Colorado situation. I just got a text from one of my buddies last night from Notre Dame. He just got back from the game. Now he's a money raiser for Notre Dame. I'll bet Notre Dame was able to reward 150, 200 of their closest confidants. You know, people on the faculty boards, people on the board of directors, all those guys essentially get a free trip with booze and shrimp cocktails on the Irish and airfare. So you get to reward your hangers-on, for lack of a better term. So all the people, even at Northern Illinois, remember when the...
I'm sure that happens, but yeah. Notre Dame makes a lot of money by making the playoff.
When I say lose, there's 41 bowl games, so 82 schools are going to bowls. 10 to 20 of them lose money on going to the bowl.
Yeah.
It's not across the board.
No.
But
we know, totally get that. I think it's 38 bowls and 3 playoff games. But I could be wrong on that. But I think it's 41 games total.
Yeah, 41 games.
So, yeah.
So 40 teams.
Regardless, my point is that if the bottom 10 bowls lost, if those two schools lost every single year, then eventually they would say, we're not going to go. What's the point? We've been losing every year. Like you said, Memphis, for example, they've gone 5 straight bowls. They would be one of those schools that maybe lost every year, money-wise. Eventually they would say no if it's really a loser. I don't think it's really a loser.
No, I know they made money last year going to the Liberty Bowl. This year, going to the Birmingham Bowl, which is a drive, which you can put the team on the bus instead of flying them across country right there. That probably resulted in them not losing money on going to the Birmingham Bowl or the New Orleans Bowl.
But
if they send them to, you know, and if you look really closely at you know, the conferences that are tied in with the various bowls, there's usually a nice regional thing where you're not having to travel too far.
Or the Midwest schools go to Florida or California,
somewhere
which they're
you
kind of happy, right? They're happy to do.
Yeah, but I doubt Memphis lost money going to the Birmingham Bowl this year because it's so close, and I know they didn't lose money going to Liberty Bowl the year before. And then they've gone to a Florida Bowl a couple of times, like the Boca Raton or something.
I'll bet
like
there's
that.
A lot of those bowls when you say lose or make.
Uh-huh.
Why? The as I mentioned to poor Maddie last week, because I was giving him no one to grief with all the stupid stuff I say, said 2018 was an odd year for me because there isn't a question that he even brings up from a tweet or anything that you can answer it in a one-word answer. We've gotten so damn complicated. Even the terms of when you ask me, Maddie, you know, because that's my used to be my life, profit and loss on businesses. When you start telling me loss, and I immediately say I have like 15 questions right out of the gate. Now, if somebody gets to give their alumni drinks and hotel rooms on essentially the conference and has nothing left for the conference, I'd do that too. But I'm going to say I lost money. But if Northern Illinois loses or Memphis loses $100,000. And gets to entertain a whole bunch of people and gets to do a recruiting trip for maybe they're looking for three kids down in that area. Is that really a loss? Probably,
you know what? Right? See, that's my point.
I'm digging into this a little bit, and what actually ends up happening is the conferences get a payoff regardless of what. Like last year, Conference USA got about $14 million in revenue sharing from the playoff, even though they weren't involved. And when they turn around and spread that among the teams, that probably makes up for the losses that maybe one or two schools took from going to a lower tier bowl.
To tell you how much.
So I think the whole thing ends up netting out.
Otherwise, why would you do it?
Yeah, I think I may have found the answer to our question on this one, where you know if you're focusing, you know, we're focusing in on, you know, showing up for one game that maybe your school loses $100,000-$200,000 on, but if you're a Conference USA school and the conference gets $14 million, which means each school gets maybe $1 million from the playoff. And you know, I'm talking about a school that a conference that'll probably never have a team in the playoff. When everything nets out, they'll end up making money from the whole bowl experience.
Well, I mean, it must
see what I
must work.
See where
out
I'm going with that? Everybody,
absolutely,
everybody. It's kind of you know, it's exactly what Rodney Dangerfield says toward the end of because the reason we all do anything is because everybody gets laid.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we're all going to get laid.
So,
I
mean, yeah, there we go. So it all works out.
Well, but you end up looking at how much of these nonprofit. I mean, just to give you, I'll tell you where this all started. When my bowl experience started, the Irish had not been to a bowl since I'm going to say Stanford in the 20s. Then they decided 1970, which would had to have been New Year's Day 71. They're going to go to a bowl. At the time, I'm going to say Maddie, 275,000 was the number for Notre Dame to go to a bowl on their own. They got all the dough. They weren't in a conference. And they put the entire 375 towards minority scholarships. Now, what they netted out of this thing after you brought people down there, and they were not going to bring the band. The alumni ponied up like $25 an alumni. They sent in a check to send the band, so people paid for that. There wasn't a 747 like now, whatever you hang around in the world in the damn thing. I mean, I don't know what they probably went on regular airlines. And, you know, maybe not, but it was not the same thing. Where the year they played in Hawaii, they jetted a 747 worth of hangers on for a 4-day vacation so they'd give the school more money. It's a whole different world. But it's not just them going there. And then when this BCS thing started, they said, okay, the Irish, even though they're not in a conference, because you're talking about the conferences get this money, the Irish, by not being in a conference, even if they never got into BCS or never got in a playoff, they're going to get money every year, just like some of the other teams, like a same share as they would have got as if they were in a conference. But now, if they go, it means they can't keep the whole amount. So they cut that deal. They said, okay, well, we'll make money every year like we're a regular conference school. But when we do go, we don't expect to get the $40 million slug and take it home and give it to nobody. Because in 1971, they didn't share it with anybody. But the number was, you know, $500,000. So it was a whole different world. So yeah, there's money flying around, but you do wonder when you look at one of these, you know, if you were to scrape off the bottom five bowls, does that mean they lose money or make money across the board? I'm going to guess they're probably losers on those. Maybe the bottom 10 for sure. You know, I don't know how you open up a stadium for 5,000 people in some of these towns. And you got to pay all these idiots to be on the, you know, the Blue Bonnet Bowl committee, right? They're all
the The salary for people that run these bowls ranges from $200,000 to $1 million a year.
You remember the guy?
That's a job I want. You have to work major, 1 day a year.
Yeah, there's major corruption too within those.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Remember the guy who did the Orange Bowl, Matty? He was the he had the Black American Express and how many golf rounds and everything that he. The guy was like the number in the top 10 of anybody who spent on American Express? Or was it the Orange Bowl guy?
He probably got to go to a different game every, you know, different Big 12 or what's the Orange Bowl? Big 12 versus
what would the Orange Bowl used to be? Yeah,
that's what it used to be. It was always Big 12 versus ACC, I thought.
Yeah.
And now it's.
So he probably got to go to a Big 12 or ACC game every year.
Now everyone's played in the Orange Bowl.
Well, Bruce got in trouble, man. It was the Fiesta Bowl guy that got in trouble.
Yes, he might be in jail, actually.
Yeah, I think he is. But I mean, the guy's American Express thing was a thing of beauty. It was like, what do you have, like 400 rounds of golf of people on there? And I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was like, anyway, S&P futures down 39, Dow futures down 371. Let's hope the year's not going to be like this. NASDAQ futures down 139. Not a good start. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.